Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as Shamita was just reporting on the news, a record-breaking 40,000 people are estimated to have marched in yesterday's annual Pride Parade. And although New York City is arguably the epicenter of the gay pride movement, discrimination against those in the LGBTQ community is more common here than many might think. Over the last 2 years, the New York City Commission on Human Rights has doubled the number of investigations into discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. So joining me now to talk about her office's response to an uptick in claims of sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination is Carmelyn Malalas, who's the chair and commissioner of the New York City Commission on Human Rights. Welcome, Commissioner.
Great to be here. Thanks, Brian.
Can you tell us a little bit more about this uptick?
Sure. So, you know, protections against discrimination based on sexual orientation under city law have been there since 1986. We've had protections in place, protecting against discrimination based on gender identity and gender expression since 2002. But frankly, when I came in just about 2.5 years ago, what we realized is, you know, the law was really underutilized in these areas. I knew that personally as an advocate because my background is as an employment attorney championing employee rights in this area. But we knew it just from looking at the statistics. City law has one of the most robust protections we have nationally in this area, and yet there were very few cases that had been filed at the commission.
So when we see an uptake in cases, even a doubling in the number of investigations into discrimination based on sexual orientation, gender identity, does that mean it's happening more, or does that mean that you're getting more into the weeds of looking into them?
You know, I think it's kind of both of them and some other variables at play as well. So if I look just at all the reporting at the commission altogether, if I don't just isolate those categories, you know, reporting into the Commission on Human Rights is up by 60% in the last year, which is considerable. Now, that's in line if you look at statistics across the country with bias incidents, hate crimes reporting, hate incidents across, the country. But the fact that it's 60% is considerable. And so I attribute that to the fact that, you know, not only are we in line with what we're seeing nationally, but I also attribute that to the fact that I think there's a lot more credibility in government. I think there's a lot more confidence in our local community that the City Commission on Human Rights is going to capably and confidently handle these cases on behalf of the communities in New York City.
In other words, LGBTQ people trust the government more in New York than they might in Nebraska or Oklahoma or wherever.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and frankly, when I'm, you know, at different programs or events where I'm working on the ground with different, you know, transgender communities or different LGBTQ communities across the city, people often come up to me and they tell me, you know what, we are filing cases at the commission. We never did it before, but we're doing it now.
And so what's your role, the commission's role, once a complaint is filed? Is this, are you an office of legal affairs? Do you take the alleged discriminator to court?
So the commission has, we have a civil law enforcement mandate. So folks can file cases at the Commission on Human Rights if they feel that they've been discriminated or harassed in, you know, over 22 areas of protection in all areas of city life. So in housing, in employment, places of public accommodation and businesses, on the street, bias-based profiling by law enforcement. So all across the city, if someone's experiencing discrimination or harassment in any of these areas, they can call us and file a complaint. We investigate that complaint. We have a law enforcement bureau that is tasked solely with looking at these complaints and also finding out if there are other things that we as a city should be taking up on our own. So if we think that even without somebody coming forward, and I think this is very important, especially when we're talking about LGBTQ communities. Some of these are very vulnerable communities or vulnerable individuals who have not had a great relationship with government in the past. And so we as the city can come forward on their behalf without them coming forward to file a complaint.
And listeners, we don't have a lot of time with New York City Human Rights Commission Chair Carmelyn Malalas because there was so much Supreme Court news that we had to get in. But We can take one or two phone calls. Not everybody's LGBTQ discrimination complaints, but maybe one or two that we could use as examples of how the commission might respond to instances of discrimination against LGBTQ New Yorkers. Go ahead.
And, you know, just as a few examples of things that we see across the city.
Well, let me put out the phone number. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you think you might have something that's a representative example or that's just, you know, important to you because you got discriminated against or somebody you know did, we could talk about how this might be handled as an example. 212-433-9692. Sorry, Commissioner, you were going to say?
Sure. So several different cases, and probably these are things, again, that folks are familiar with that resonate with people. You know, we have situations in which transgender New Yorkers are working in the workplace, and because of how they look or because they maybe have indicated that they are you know, about to undergo a transition or in a certain stage of transition, that suddenly, you know, they don't have their job anymore. Or the promotional opportunity that was before them somehow that ceases to be. We've had situations where, you know, in one case, we had a brokerage firm in the housing context that refused to take a gay couple's HASA voucher. And there, we also worked with the brokerage firm. We, you know, entered into a conciliation agreement so that finding that there was likely a violation of the city human rights law, that brokerage firm then had to pay, you know, a $5,000 damages award to the couple, as well as undergo training and you know, submit to posting in their offices. So there's a lot of things that go on in the city.
I see that one statistic in the survey from Comptroller Scott Stringer's office to determine how government services and programs reach LGBTQ New Yorkers. One statistic that really stood out from Stringer's survey was that out of 359 LGBTQ residents from all five boroughs who participated, 38% of transgender or gender nonconforming survey takers said they experienced homelessness, which suggests that homelessness is a particular problem among transgender New Yorkers or gender nonconforming New Yorkers, and maybe suggests that the Department of Homeless Services needs to make some additional efforts with respect to this population in general.
Well, I think certainly when you're thinking about transgender and transgender people of color in New York City, and gender nonconforming people of color in New York City, we're talking about some of the most vulnerable people in the city, because those are also some of the people who are probably most prone to being alienated, not just from their communities, but from their actual families, right? So the fact that that statistic is so high, one, is not very surprising. But it's also why, you know, and I was happy to see that Comptroller Stringer had put out this report, because I think it's very important that we do shed a light on the challenges faced by LGBTQ and particularly transgender and gender nonconforming New Yorkers. It follows, you know, the year before in June of 2016, the Commission on Human Rights had released a citywide public campaign making clear that everyone in New York City, regardless of their gender identity or gender expression, had the ability to use restrooms consistent with their gender identity or gender expression. Similarly, trying to throw the force of government behind some of who we find to be the most vulnerable people in New York City.
Jim in the West Village, you're on WNYC with New York City Human Rights Commissioner Carmela Mullalis. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. One comment before I ask my question is that we're beginning to see the problems that happen when you merge all of these different groups together. Sexual orientation and gender identity should not be talked about in the same sentence. They're both critical issues. But when you merge them all together, what usually gets lost is the sexual orientation issue in this moment of transgender rights issue. I'm not speaking against it, but they should be talked about separately. And gender identity is certainly a subjective condition that is not like sexual orientation. Why I called, though, is I wanted to ask a question of the commission. I live in the West Village, and all rent-regulated tenants in this part of the city are under siege from the landlords. And in an attempt to evict me from my apartment that I've lived in since 1969, one of the charges made against me is that I flew a rainbow flag off of the flagpole that is a part of my fire escape. Now, my lawyer said that the flag charge was one thing, but identifying it as a rainbow flag was a possible biased situation. I didn't do anything about it, and I wondered if I should have gone to the commission and said, this is discriminatory.
Interesting question.
Right. So, Jim, thank you for your questions and your comments. You know, two things I would say. One, you know, just for your initial comment, you know, absolutely the type of discrimination that that exists based on sexual orientation is different than the type of discrimination that exists based on gender identity and gender expression. Sometimes they overlap, but they are also very distinct. And I think when I do talk about them together, you know, I also talk about it as an out lesbian myself who, you know, who basically just wants to recognize that there's also kind of a shared history of resistance and a shared history or movement amongst those different groups. But I absolutely do agree that they are also separate categories. Now, with regards to your housing situation, you know, I think if in fact you were subject to an adverse action by your housing provider because you are gay identified or because of your sexual orientation, meaning that, you know, if someone were able to fly a flag, you know, a U.S. flag or a different type of flag, and that would be fine, but specifically because it was a rainbow flag, then yes, that could be a violation of the city human rights law. And I would ask that you provide your information to the show's producers so that we could follow up at the Commission on Human Rights.
And Jim, if you want to do that, we'll take your information off the air. I think I understood him to say that the landlord did object to any flag being flown off the fire escape, but also mentioned that it was a rainbow flag. So there could have been an additional element of discrimination, but at the same time, it sounded like that landlord did not want any flag flying from the fire escape.
Well, so, right. So I would leave it to our law enforcement bureau to be asking some of those questions.
Okay. And I see that your office, on the question of transgender rights, just launched a campaign to expand transgender bathroom access. Now, is that just encouragement of the private sector to offer that kind of access, or how does it fall to your office?
So that was actually a campaign that we launched in June of 2016, but it has had a long life, and I think it's because it has really appealed to people in New York City who realize that, you know, while we're seeing the rights of our transgender and gender nonconforming brothers and sisters across the country contracting in other areas, that we here in New York City are going to resist that. So we put that out there, and it was in line with other things that we were doing at the time across the city. It applies to both public and private employers and businesses. So across the city, people should be able to use restrooms consistent with their gender identity or gender expression without having to show any ID.
I happen to have been at the Museum of Modern Art this weekend and noticed that the bathrooms were signed, that is, the signs on the bathroom said men, self-identified, and women, self-identified. And I hadn't seen that before in that explicit a way. Is that the standard? Is that the gold standard that you would like to see become widespread?
You know, I have seen different versions of signs that are intended to express inclusivity. You know, one of the things I guess I would say about that is there are folks who would also, I think, self-identify as being non-binary. So I don't know if either of those signs would particularly appeal to them. So I think that signs that are expressing an eagerness or a recognition of inclusivity are, you know, really, I don't know that there is necessarily a gold standard. And I mean, one of the things that, again, in 2016, the mayor did is we worked with the mayor and the administration on Executive Order 16, which made clear that in every city agency, there should be signs, there should be posters up, making it clear to the public and to employees that people have to be able to use single-sex facilities consistent with their gender identity and gender expression. And that is so important because it's like a welcome sign to people. People then look at that sign and say, you know what, this is a place, or this is a person who understands it and gets it.
And before you go, as commissioner and chair of the New York City Commission on Human Rights, let me get your quick reaction to the two stories from the Supreme Court from the last hour, and whether these have any overtones for your office or for New York City. One is that they will hear the case of a baker who does not want to make cakes for gay and lesbian weddings based on that person's, the baker's assertion of religious liberty. If the Supreme Court upholds that baker's right and interprets that the baker has a right, I guess because it's federal, then there's nothing you could do about it at the city level?
Well, the city has different laws than what exists on the federal level. City laws are generally, especially the New York City human rights law, is considered one of the broadest and most protective in the country. So just because something exists at the federal level, does not mean that the same would exist here in New York City. And for that particular example, I think what I would say, both as a lawyer and as the Commissioner on Human Rights, is if somebody is engaging in commerce, if someone is engaging in business and calling themselves a place of public accommodation, we here in New York City would expect them to treat everybody equally and to not turn people away, not just because of their sexual orientation, but for any number of reasons, because we would not, of course, want that to apply. You can't just turn people away because you don't like what their religion is or your race is or et cetera.
Of course, if they establish a constitutional right to do so in limited circumstances, then it's going to be difficult. And the last thing is the travel ban. The Supreme Court lifted the stay on the Trump administration's travel ban on people from those six countries, but they exempted people with any current connection to the United States. So if people are green card holders or if people are students in the United States, if people even have business with people in the United States on an ongoing way, apparently this lifting of the ban will not apply to them. It's only supposed to apply to people with no current connection to the United States for the next 90 days, starting in 72 hours. They're apparently not going to be able to come to the United States from those six Muslim countries. Any implications for the New York City Commission for Human Rights?
So obviously that just came out. I think this is something that my office will be looking at along with the Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs. You know, when any news comes out on the federal level or, on state level, local level, involving New York City's immigrant communities, this is an administration that cares very much about its immigrant communities. And so, in the past year, the Commission on Human Rights has been working very closely with the Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs as news has been coming out to determine what information can we provide to our immigrant communities. Because what happens is we get flooded with questions. How does this affect us? How does this affect our rights on the local level? And we want to be able to either provide them with the information that they can rely on or to point them in resources that they could avail of.
Carmelyn Mullalis, Chair and Commissioner of the New York City Commission on Human Rights. Thank you so much.
Thanks again, Brian.